जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय अद्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्तवृंद जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय अद्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्तवृंद. Reading from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 8, Talks Between the Lord and Ramananda Rai, texts number 59 and 60. I'll do 59 and we can do 60 together. Lilananda Prabhu was supposed to give class today, but he was bold enough to go on the European bus tour with Manu Ram and all the other devotees, so he'll be gone for 35 days on that trip, traveling throughout Europe on a bus with them. So he asked me to give class in his place. Prabhu kahe eho bhai ange aage kaha aar rahe kahe Krishna karmarpana sarva sadyasar. I'll do this one together, then we can do the next one together. The Lord replied, "This is external. You had better tell me of some other means." Ramananda replied, "To offer the results of one's activities to Krishna is the essence of all perfection." So we'll do number 60 together. Yat karosi yad ashnasi. Yat jahosi dadasi yat. Yat tapasya sikanteya. Tat karusva mad arpanam. Yat karosi yad ashnasi. Yat jahosi dadasi yat. Yat tapasya sikanteya. Tat karusva mad arpanam. Yajamasi jarasnasi. Yajosi dadasi yat. Yatapasya sikanteya. Tatkarusvamadapanam. Yatkarosi arashnasi. Yajosi dadasi yat. Yatapasya sikanteya. Tatkarusvamarapanam. Yatkarosi arashnasi. Yajosi dadasi yat. Yatapasya sikanteya. Tatkarusvamarapanam. Ladies? Yat karosi arashnasi. Yat jahosi dadasi yat. Yat tapasya sikanteya. Tat karusvamadarpanam. Yat karosi arashnasi. Yat jahosi dadasi yat. Yat tapasya sikanteya. Tat karusvamarapanam. Yat karosi arashnasi. Yat jahosi dadasi yat. Yat tapasya sikanteya. Tat karusvamarapanam. Yat, whatever. Karosi, you do. Yat, whatever. Ashnasi, you eat. Yat, whatever. Jahosi, you offer and sacrifice. Dadasi, you give in charity. Yat, whatever. Yat, whatever. Tapasyasi, you perform as austerity. Kaunteya, O son of Kunti. Tat, that. Kurusva, just do. Mat, unto me. Arpanam, offering. Ramananda Rai continued, O son of Kunti, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all austerities that you may perform, should be done as an offering unto me. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Lord has said that the Varnashram Dharma is not properly executed in this age of Kali. Therefore, he ordered Ramananda Rai to go further into the matter. Ramananda replied in this verse from Srimad Bhagavad Gita 9:27 that while remaining in the system of Varnashram Dharma, one may offer the results of his activities to Lord Sri Krishna in loving service. Naturally, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was asking Ramananda Roy about the execution of devotional service. Ramananda Roy first enunciated the principle of Varnashram Dharma in consideration of materialistic people. However, this conception is not transcendental. As long as one is in the material world, he must follow the principles of Varnashram Dharma. But devotional service is transcendental. The system of Varnashram Dharma refers to the three modes of material nature. But transcendental devotional service is on the absolute platform. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu belonged to the spiritual world, and his methods for propagating the Sankirtan movement are also imported from the spiritual world. Srila Narottam Das Thakur has sung Golokera Prema Dhana Harinama Sankirtana Ratina Janmila Kene Thai. This states that the Sankirtan movement has nothing to do with this material world. It is imported from the spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan. Narottam Das Thakur laments that mundane people do not take this Sankirtan movement seriously. Considering the position of devotional service and the Sankirtan movement, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu deemed the system of Varnashram Dharma to be material, although it aims at elevation to the spiritual platform. However, the Sankirtan movement can raise one immediately to the spiritual platform. Consequently, it is said that Varnashram Dharma is external, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu requested Ramananda Roy to proceed deeper into the matter and uncover the spiritual platform. Sometimes materialists consider Lord Vishnu a material conception. Impersonalists think that above Lord Vishnu is the impersonal Brahman. The impersonalists misunderstand the worship of Lord Vishnu. They worship Lord Vishnu to merge into his body. In order that Vishnu Aradhana not be misunderstood, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu requested that Sri Ramananda Rai proceed further and clear up the issue. Ramananda Rai quoted the verse from Bhagavad Gita stating that the results of one's occupational duty may be offered to Lord Vishnu or Krishna. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 1:28, it is also said, Dharmasvanusthitapam sam vikshakshena katasuya natpadayat yatiratim shrama eva hi kevalam. If one executes the occupational duties of Varnashram Dharma, but does not cultivate his dormant Krishna consciousness, his activities are futile. His occupation simply becomes unnecessary labor. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyanandana Sarakaya Chakshurun Militam Gena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Yat Karosi Arashna Siya Jahosi Dadasi Yat Yat tapasyasi kaunteya tat karusva mat arpanam. O son of Kunti, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all austerities that you may perform, should be done as an offering unto me. In Vrindavan, during Srila Prabhupada's last days, the temple commander there was Jagad Guru Swami, who is now known as Nisringa Swami, has an ashram in South India. And in 1977, the contract with the Radha Damodar Temple for Srila Prabhupada's rooms, although he'd been renting them since late 1950s, was not complete. It wasn't like ISKCON still had those rooms, although they did, they sort of didn't. It wasn't clear. But Srila Prabhupada's belongings were still in that room. And he went there, Jagadguru Swami Narayana Maharaj, went there and pretty much cleaned it out for posterity and sharing and saving those items. Has his typewriter and his different trunks and personal paraphernalia that was in Srila Prabhupada's rooms all those years. And he came across a manuscript that I think was entitled Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan Movement and His Taking of Sannyas. But the middle 40 pages were missing, and he never found them. But part of that manuscript was this conversation, Srila Prabhupada's commentary written in 1959 on the talks between Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya. And the book was called In Search of Life's Ultimate Goal. So he's published that book. It's not on the list of BBT books, but it's certainly a book that is available. And if you go online and look up In Search of Life's Goal, Prabhupada PDF, you can find the book. So commenting further, it kind of explains this is a rather short purport compared to some of the longer ones in that book, since it was a commentary written right around the time when Srila Prabhupada took sannyas. He describes that the reason Lord Chaitanya wanted to emphasize deeper and deeper was similar to what he's pointing out here, that Varnashram Dharma in itself deals with the three modes of material nature. And he points out that in the Varnashram system, simply performing one's duty, there's no real even conception of God or a supreme proprietor or someone who should be the enjoyer of one's sacrifice. So this is the first step up from that conception of simply performing one's duty. The idea is to do it for the pleasure of God, or at least offer the results to Lord Krishna. In the material world, the root reason, the core propelling factor for coming to this material world is that the living entity, the marginal jiva, wants to enjoy rather than serve. So as we come into this world and sojourn through different species of life, the selfish impulse remains there way down in the core of our hearts. So the Vedic system, Vedic culture, the Vedas are a process, a systematic method and culture of helping everyone from any position of that selfishness. Bhagavad Gita describes that lust covers the living entity, just as dust covers a mirror, or smoke covers a fire, or the womb covers the embryo. There are different degrees of lust. And what is lust? Lust is I want to enjoy. I want to enjoy somehow or other. And there are millions and billions and unlimited manifestations of that impulse. So just like if a person's sick, something's not right with them, they go to the doctor, they get a prescription according to their individual problem. It's not that you go to the doctor and they just, most doctors, don't give the same prescription to everybody. They'll test each person's disease and then prescribe accordingly. Same thing in court. What do they try to discern when punishment is rewarded or given to someone for their criminal act? They try to analyze why this person did it. There's first degree murder, second degree murder, manslaughter. All are the act of killing somebody. But they're put into different categories. Did he plan it? Did they really plan this out and premeditated, figure out how to kill that person? That's one motive. Then there's another where there's a fight and somebody shoots another one, and that's second degree. And then there's another one where sometimes you can even hit a person with a car and get manslaughter. So there's different motives behind a person's activities. And this core selfishness has to be gradually the purpose of the entire material world. As we know, it's called the prison, the house of Durga. Durga means prison house, is a house of correction. The purpose of the material creation is to correct the living entities gradually so that they will again want to serve the Supreme Lord, the source of their existence. So in that process of Vedic culture, there are different prescriptions for different people, different living entities, different human beings especially. So let us look from Bhagavad Gita at a section of Lord Krishna's teachings to Arjuna, which kind of encapsulate that progression one after another in just a series of four or five verses, 12:8 through 12. This is from the top down. Lord Krishna says in 12:8, just fix your mind upon me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and engage all your intelligence in me. Thus you will live in me without a doubt. Now this means 24 hours a day, all the time. This is spontaneous love for Krishna. Always think of me. My dear Arjuna, winner of wealth, if you cannot fix your mind upon me without deviation, then follow the regulative principles of bhakti yoga. In this way, develop a desire to attain me. So, we have a person who has a little bit of a disease. Always think of me. Have spontaneous attraction to me. 24 hours a day, engage in my loving service. That's the first instruction. And if we're honest, even as devotees, we see that we do that most of the time. We've got a pretty good handle on part of the day. But there's also the other part of the day, those little times when we're not really so absorbed. 24 hours a day and thinking and worshiping like that. So the beginning process is called Vaidhi Bhakti. The spiritual master says, do this. Act in this way. Wake up early, worship the deity, chant these mantras, bathe, take prasadam, and then work for me. Work under the order of the spiritual master. Not according to your proclivities, not according to what you want to do, but according to what the spiritual master wants to do. Text 10. If you cannot practice the regulations of bhakti yoga, then just try to work for me, because by working for me, you will come to the perfect stage. Now, what we're doing is going down kind of the ladder, but the prescription is still applicable. It's not that because a person can't do something, then they're excommunicated or lost in eternity or go to hell because they couldn't do a certain thing. The concept of the Vedas is such that you can gradually apply yourself, whatever your situation, and gradually elevate by that practice. The activities of Vaidhi Bhakti, as we just described, are supposed to bring one to the point where they become more of a spontaneous action. One comes to the point where they want to do it, or it comes naturally. But if you can't do that, then work for me. And I think in our analysis of this particular verse, in the particular progression, this is kind of where this one is. Yat karosi yat ashnasi yat jahosi dadasi yat yat tapasyasi kanteya tat kadrusvam arpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer and give away and sacrifice, whatever austerities you perform, do them and give the result to me. Previously in ISKCON, when Srila Prabhupada was present, the concept of direct devotional service throughout the day was a bit more prominent, at least in the places where I was. For example, every temple president always has the challenge of maintaining the temple and the devotees and the deity worship. So income is a natural consideration that temple presidents have to keep together and organize. So one of the temple presidents wrote to Srila Prabhupada and proposed that the devotees sell jewelry and in this way they could help to support the temple activities. And Prabhupada said, no, this is only business. We're not business. You sell my books, and by the income from the sale of the books, you maintain the temple. Because the idea is, if you go out on book distribution every day, what will be your mentality while you're distributing those books? You'll be thinking of me, you'll be thinking of Krishna, you'll be trying to help the conditioned souls. And in this way, there was a whole army of book distributors who forewent the normal business process of maintaining their livelihoods and families and temples, and simply went out and did book distribution as their livelihood, and in this way molded their life so that they were thinking of Krishna more due to their natural occupational duty. That has kind of a little bit dissipated or changed and transferred as people progressed and life changed and temple communal life changed, not in a bad way. Some people matured so much by that activity that even though they went out and started to perform other professional duties, they also were able to think of Krishna. But the point that Srila Prabhupada makes in search of the ultimate goal of life and here is that one has to, the selfishness, the desire for the fruit of the action, the paycheck, that has to be given to Krishna. And if you're working and getting a paycheck, obviously you can't give the whole thing to Krishna, because you have to people have to maintain their homes, their children, their households, whatever they have to have, businesses, whatever they have to maintain. So the act is almost like juggling the razor's edge. How much do we give to Krishna? How much do we keep for ourselves? And when we have the mentality for keeping it for ourselves, then how do we fit that in? If Krishna is saying, give everything to me. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a perfect, wonderful example of a grihastha Vaishnava who worked, maintained a big family, made good money, and remained Krishna conscious. And if you look at his daily schedule, and his activities and the books he produced, then you can see how a wondrous, a glorious life he lived. It's not that those things are condemned, but as we progress through the stages of doing this, the doctor is telling, Krishna is saying, think of me, offer more and more, and try to come to that platform where we're always doing it for Krishna. Another point that Srila Prabhupada points out is that in the Varnashram system, there's a tendency towards impersonalism, since there's no conception of God. Conception of God gives giving something to him and receiving something in return. That's the lower stages of love, right? Where you do something for someone, but you do it with an expectation of them reciprocating with you. It's not selfless. It's calculated. It's adulterated. So we have a nice clip where Srila Prabhupada explains a little bit about this verse. Yeah. Take this one down, put the clip up. And this is where he's describing this verse, yat karoshi yat asnasi yas dadosi yat tapasi yat, as an adulterated form of karma yoga. Yes. Put on the audio.
Yoga means contact or having connection. So bhakti yoga means directly connection with Krishna or God. That is bhakti. Other yogas, they are not directly connected. Karma yoga, yoga means connection with Krishna or God. But when there is the word karma yoga, it is adulterated. It is not pure. Karma Yoga means Jat Karosi, Jat Juhosi, Jat Asnasi, Tapasya Jat Kurusa Karma Latmano. That is Karma Yoga. Whatever you are doing, in the beginning, one cannot take to pure Bhakti Yoga. Therefore, Karma Yoga is recommended. Never mind, whatever you are doing, in that position, you can become a devotee. Karma Yoga, that is. People are interested in different types of work. So, therefore Krishna says, just kurusu, never mind, whatever you are doing. So how it becomes Karma Yoga? Not kurusu tadma darpanam, you give it to me. Suppose you are doing business and you are earning lots of money, so Krishna says, all right, go on, you are attached to business, so go on doing that, but the money earned out of your business, you give it to me. This is karma. Not that you earn money and spend for your sense gratification. That is not karma. The rascals, they are saying this is karma. For sense gratification, they are using and that is karma. No, that is not karma. Here is karma. It doesn't matter whatever you are doing, but the ultimate result, you give it to me. In another place, Krishna says, karmani adhikaraste ma phale sukadagam. You can go on with your business, but don't expect the fruit of the business. Ma phale. Indirectly says, the fruit should be given to me. Ma phale sukadachana. Don't expect the fruit. Suppose you and grow a nice mango tree, and there will be fruit, nice fruit. So, according to Bhagavad Gita, it is said, ma phaleshu kadachana. You don't take the fruits. Oh, such a nice mango tree I have nourished in so many years, now the fruit is there, and Krishna says, ma phaleshu kadachana. Don't take the fruit. Then who will take the fruit? It will rot, it will fall down on the ground and it will rot. No. The idea is you don't take but you give it to me. This is karma. It is not that it should be wasted. That is karma. So those who are kurmis, very much attached to material activities, for them this karma yoga is the karma. Somewhere other, be connected with Krishna.
So, the process is clear. Our individual application of it is what each one of us is responsible for. And today is also Hara Panchami, so I wanted to read some of that because in this progression, it's really quite a large spectrum between what Ramananda Roy is starting off with and where he'll end up. It's a rather technical, there's a technical section of it where it describes various ecstasies of Srimati Radharani and position of Krishna. And I won't read that, but here's a nice leela of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Jagannath, which of course is taking place today in Jagannath Puri. Knowing that the Hara Panchami, oh, there's a nice verse too that I brought that should preclude this pastime. Matura dwaraka lila yat karoti cha gokule nilachara stita krishna sta eva richati prabhu. Matura dwaraka lila yat karoti cha gokule. This means Matura dwaraka lila. Whatever leelas are taking place in Mathura or Dwarka, yat karoti cha gokule, or in Gokul, whatever leelas are in Mathura, Dwarka, or Gokul, nilachala stita krishna, sta eva richati prabhu, those pastimes can be found in Nilachala, Jagannath Puri. From one of the Vaishnav Puranas, he says. Knowing that the Hara Panchami festival was drawing near, King Pachaparudra attentively talked with Kasimisra. Kasimisra was like a temple commander. Tomorrow will be the function of Hara Panchami, or Lakshmi Vijay. Hold this festival in a way that it has never been held before. Purport. The Hara Panchami festival takes place 5 days after the Rath Yatra festival. Lord Jagannath has left his wife, the goddess of fortune, and gone to Vrindavan, which is the Gundicha temple. Due to separation from the Lord, the goddess of fortune decides to come to see the Lord at Gundicha. The coming of the goddess of fortune to Gundicha is celebrated as Hara Panchami. Sometimes this is misspelled as Hara Panchami by the Atibadis. The word Hara means to see and refers to the goddess of fortune going to see Lord Jagannath. The word Panchami means the fifth day, and it's used because it takes place on the fifth day of the moon. King Pachaparudra continued, hold this festival in such a gorgeous way that upon seeing it, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will be completely pleased and astonished. Take as many printed cloths, small bells, umbrellas, and chamaras as there are in my storehouse and in the deity's storehouse. Collect all kinds of small and large flags and ringing bells, and then decorate the carrier and have various musical and dancing parties accompany it. In this way, decorate the carrier attractively. You should also double the quantity of prasadam, make so much that it will even surpass the Rath Yatra festival. When I was doing my research for Jagannath Puri book, talking to the temple head of the temple, they cook for an average of 10 to 20,000 people every day, and during festivals, 50 to 75,000 people is what they cook for in that. It's the biggest kitchen in the world. So he's saying, double the quantity of prasadam, so it'll be even bigger than Rath Yatra. Arrange the festival in such a way that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu may freely go with all his devotees to visit the deity without difficulty. In the morning, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took his personal associates with him to see Lord Jagannath at Sundarachala, that's the Gundicha. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his personal devotees returned to Nilachala with great eagerness to see the Hara Panchami festival. Kasimisra received Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with great respect, and taking the Lord and his associates to a very nice place, he had them seated. After taking his seat, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to hear about a particular mellow of devotional service. Therefore, mildly smiling, he began to question Swarup Damodar. Although Lord Jagannath enjoys his pastimes at Dwarkadham and naturally manifests sublime liberality there, still, once a year, he becomes unlimitedly eager to see Vrindavan. Now, a lot of people, years ago, used to say that this verse meant that Jagannath Puri was Dwarka. That's not what it says. It says that he's going to stay in Puri and go from his temple-like opulence of the Jagannath temple to the forest-like rural atmosphere of Sundarachala Gundicha. Pointing out the neighboring gardens, if you look at old paintings from the British time of Jagannath Puri, it's actually a very beautiful place without tar or cars or buses. It was all sandy banks, tons of coconut trees, blowing in the breeze because it's close to the ocean. The flag on the temple is blowing, so beautiful, nice, peaceful scene. Pointing out the neighboring gardens, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, all these gardens exactly resemble Vrindavan. Therefore, Lord Jagannath is very eager to see them again. Externally, he gives the excuse that he wants to participate in the Rath Yatra festival. But actually, he wants to leave Jagannath Puri to go to Sundarachala, the Gundicha temple, a replica of Vrindavan. The Lord enjoys his pastimes day and night in various flower gardens there. But why does he not take the Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, with him? Swarup Damodar replied, my dear Lord, please hear the reason for this. Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, cannot be admitted into the pastimes of Vrindavan. In the pastimes of Vrindavan, the only assistants are the gopis. But for the gopis, no one can attract the mind of Krishna. The Lord said, using the car festival as an excuse, Krishna goes there with Subhadra and Baladev. All the pastimes with the gopis that take place in those gardens are very confidential ecstasies of Lord Krishna. No one knows them. Since there is no fault at all in Krishna's pastimes, why does the goddess of fortune become angry? Swarup Damodar replied, it is the nature of a girl afflicted by love to become immediately angry upon finding any neglect or part on the part of her lover. While Swarup Damodar and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were talking, the procession of the goddess of fortune came by. She was riding upon a golden palanquin carried by four men and bedecked with a variety of jewels. The palanquin was also surrounded by people carrying umbrellas, chamara whisks, and flags, and it was preceded by musicians and dancing girls. The maidservants were carrying water pitchers, chamara whisks, and boxes for betel nuts. There were hundreds of maidservants, all attractively dressed and wearing valuable necklaces. When we were on Padyatra, walking from Dwarka south, we came to a place in Gujarat called Anand. It's the place of Amul butter and Amul cheese, place of the milk production. And these people were so pious, it was unbelievable. As we came in, we had an elephant, and then we had tons of devotees on Sankirtan, and then a cart being pulled by the bulls with Gorni Thai and Srila Prabhupada on it. And they actually, we had a advance party that would go and arrange places for the devotees to stay. So all the virgin girls in Anand got together, and they all dressed in the same colored saris. They had little brass plates with a coconut and a pot and a cloth on top of the coconut, and they came walking out with the whole town, came out to greet the Padyatra and the devotees as they came in. So when I read this, it's the goddess of fortune coming out of the temple. It's a small palanquin. I've seen it, and they don't do it like this anymore. They do it very late at night, and it's just kind of a small palanquin that runs down to the Gundicha rather quickly. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning one time. But here, it's daytime, it's morning, it's beautiful. The chamaras, the whisks, the girls are all nicely dressed. Chamaras and umbrellas and everything going along with her. In an angry mood, the goddess of fortune arrived at the main gate of the Gundicha temple, accompanied by many members of her family, all of whom exhibited uncommon opulence. I've mentioned many times before, how in Jagannath Puri, the Varnashram system is very ingrained in their culture. So as a boy or a girl grows up, their position in society is set by their family position. Everybody has a different service, and they have for generations. So the family members of the goddess of fortune consider her their family. The Daityapatis, on the other hand, are the family members of Lord Jagannath, the ones who take care of him when he becomes sick. So apparently these particular people come along with the Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune. When the procession arrived, the maidservants of the goddess of fortune began to arrest the principal servants of Lord Jagannath. The maidservants bound the servants of Lord Jagannath, handcuffed them, and made them fall down at the lotus feet of the goddess of fortune. Indeed, they were arrested just like thieves who have all their riches taken away. When the servants fell down before the lotus feet of the goddess of fortune, they almost fell unconscious. They were chastised and made the butt of jokes and loose language. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates saw such impudence exhibited by the maidservants of the goddess of fortune, they covered their faces in their hands and began to smile. Swarup Damodar said, there is no egotistic pride like this within the three worlds. At least I have never seen or heard of it. When a woman is neglected and disappointed, out of egoistic pride, she gives up her ornaments and morosely sits down on the ground, marking lines on it with her nails. I've heard of this kind of pride in Satyabham, Krishna's proudest queen. I've also heard of it in the gopis of Vrindavan, who are the reservoir of all transcendental mellows. But in this case, the goddess of fortune, I see a different kind of pride. She manifests her own opulence and even goes with her soldiers to attack her husband. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, please, tell me of the varieties of egotistic pride manifested in Vrindavan. Swarup Damodar replied, the pride of the gopis is like a river flowing with hundreds of tributaries. The characteristics and modes of love are different in different women. Their jealous anger also takes on different varieties and qualities. It is not possible to give a complete statement about the different types of jealous anger manifested by the gopis, but a few principles may serve as an indication. There are three types of women experiencing jealous anger: sober women, restless women, and women who are both restless and sober. When a sober heroine sees her hero approaching from a distance, she immediately stands up to receive him. When he comes near, she offers him a place to sit. The sober heroine conceals her anger within her heart and externally speaks very sweet words. When her lover embraces her, she returns the embrace. The sober heroine is very simple in her behavior. She keeps her jealous anger within her heart, but with mild words and smiles, she rejects the advances of her lover. The restless heroine, however, sometimes chastises her lover with cruel words, sometimes pulls his ear, and sometimes binds him with a flower garland. The heroine, who is a combination of sobriety and restlessness, always jokes with equivocal words. She sometimes praises her lover, sometimes blasphemes him, and sometimes remains indifferent. Heroines may also be classified as captivated, intermediate, and impudent. Captivated heroine does not know very much about cunning intricacies of jealous anger. The captivated heroine simply covers her face and goes on crying. When she hears sweet words from her lover, she's very satisfied. Both the intermediate and impudent heroines can be classified as sober, restless, and both sober and restless. All their characteristics can be further described and classified in three divisions. Some heroines are talkative, some are mild, and some are equal poised. Each heroine, according to her own character, increases Sri Krishna's loving ecstasy. Although some of the gopis are talkative, some mild, and some equal poised, all of them are transcendental and faultless. They please Krishna by their unique characteristics. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu felt unlimited happiness upon hearing these descriptions, and again requested Swarup Damodar to continue speaking. Then Swarup Damodar goes on and describes a whole bunch about Krishna and Srimati Radharani, but time is limited. A little bit at the end. When Krishna comes forward and greedily snatches the border of Srimati Radharani's sari, he's actually very pleased within, but still, she tries to stop him. This ecstatic attitude of Srimati Radharani's is called kutamita. When this ecstatic ornament is manifested, Radharani externally tries to avoid Krishna, but she apparently becomes angry, although she is very happy within. When the border of her sari and the cloth veiling her face are caught, she externally appears offended and angry, but within her heart, she is very happy. Learned scholars call this attitude kutamita. Although Srimati Radharani was checking Krishna with her hand, internally she was thinking, let Krishna satisfy his desires. In this way, she was very pleased within, although she externally displayed opposition and anger. Srimati Radharani's externally display of a cry, kind of dry crying, as if she is offended. Then she mildly smiles and admonishes Lord Krishna. Actually, she has no desire to stop Krishna's endeavor to touch her body with his hands. Yet Srimati Radharani, whose thighs are like the trunk of a baby elephant, protests his advances and, sweetly smiling, admonishes him. At such times, she cries without tears on her charming face. In this way, Srimati Radharani is ornamented and decorated with various ecstatic symptoms which attract the mind of Sri Krishna. It is not at all possible to describe the unlimited pastimes of Sri Krishna, even though he himself describes them in his incarnation as Sahasravadana, the thousand-mouthed Seshanaga. At this time, Srivas Thakur smiled and told Swarup Damodar, "My dear sir, please hear me. Just see how opulent this goddess of fortune is. As far as Vrindavan's opulence is concerned, it consists of a few flowers and some twigs, some minerals from the hills, and a few peacock feathers, and berries from a plant called Gunja. When Lord Jagannath decided to see Vrindavan, He went there, and upon hearing this, the goddess of fortune experienced restlessness and jealousy. She wondered, why did Lord Jagannath give up so much opulence and go to Vrindavan? To make him a laughing stock, the goddess of fortune made arrangements for much decoration. Then the maidservants of the goddess of fortune said to the servants of Lord Jagannath, why did your Lord Jagannath abandon the great opulence of the goddess of fortune and for the sake of a few leaves, fruits, and flowers, go to a flower garland to see Srimati Radharani? Your master is so expert at everything, but why does he do such things? Now bring your master here, before the goddess of fortune. In this way, all the maidservants of the goddess of fortune arrested the servants of Lord Jagannath, bound them by the waist, and brought them before the goddess of fortune. When all the maidservants brought Lord Jagannath's servants before the lotus feet of the goddess of fortune, the Lord's servants were fined and forced to submit. All the maidservants began to beat the Rathkar with sticks, and they treated the servants of Lord Jagannath almost like thieves. Finally, all of Lord Jagannath's servants submitted to the goddess of fortune with folded hands, assuring her that they would bring Lord Jagannath to her the very next day. Being thus pacified, the goddess of fortune returned to her apartment. Just see, Srivas Thakur continued, my goddess of fortune is opulent beyond description. Srivas Thakur continued, your gopis are engaged in boiling milk and churning it into yogurt. But my mistress, the goddess of fortune, sits on a throne made of jewels and gems. Srivas Thakur, who was enjoying the mood of Narada Muni, thus made some jokes. Hearing them, all the personal servants of Mahaprabhu began to smile. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then told Srivas Thakur, my dear Srivas, your nature is exactly like that of Narada Muni. The Supreme Personality of Godhead's opulence is having a direct influence upon you. Swarup Damodar is a pure devotee of Vrindavan. He doesn't even know what opulence is, for he's simply absorbed in pure devotional service. Swarup Damodar then retorted, my dear Srivas, please hear me with attention. You have forgotten about the transcendental opulence of Vrindavan. The natural opulence of Vrindavan is just like an ocean. The opulence of Dwarka or Vaikuntha is not even to be compared with a drop. Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, full of all opulence, and his complete opulences are exhibited only in Vrindavan Dham. Vrindavan Dham is made of transcendental touchstone. Its entire surface is the source of all valuable jewels, and the Chintamani stone is used to decorate the lotus feet of the maidservants of Vrindavan. Vrindavan is a natural forest of desire trees and creepers, and the inhabitants do not want anything but the fruits and flowers of those desire trees. In Vrindavan there are cows that fulfill all desires, kamadhenus, and their number is unlimited. They graze from forest to forest and deliver only milk. The people want nothing else. In Vrindavan, the natural speech of the people sounds like music, and their natural motion resembles a dance. The water in Vrindavan is nectar, and the Brahmajyoti's effulgence, which is full of transcendental bliss, is directly perceived there in its form. The gopis there are also goddesses of fortune, and they surpass the goddesses of fortune who abides in the Vaikuntha. In Vrindavan, Lord Krishna plays on his transcendental flute, which is his dear companion. Srivas Thakur then began to dance in ecstatic love. He vibrated sounds by slapping his armpits with the palms of his hands and laughed very loudly. Thus Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard these descriptions about the pure transcendental mellows of Srimati Radharani. Absorbed in transcendental ecstasy, the Lord then began to dance. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was dancing in ecstatic love and Swarup Damodar was singing, the Lord said, go on singing, go on singing. The Lord then extended his own ears. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's ecstatic love was awakened by hearing these songs of Vrindavan. In this way he inundated Purusottama, Jagannath Puri, with love of God. Finally, the goddess of fortune returned to her apartment. In due course of time, as Mahaprabhu was dancing, afternoon arrived. After much singing, all four Sankirtan parties grew fatigued, but Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's ecstatic love increased twofold. While dancing, absorbed in Srimati Radharani's ecstatic love, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in her very form. So he actually exhibited the form of Srimati Radharani while he was dancing. Seeing this from a distant place, Nityananda Prabhu offered prayers. Seeing the ecstatic love of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu did not approach, but remained a little distant away. Only Nityananda Prabhu could catch Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but the ecstatic mood of the Lord would not stop. At the same time, kirtan could not be continued. Swarup Damodar then informed the Lord that all the devotees were fatigued. Seeing the situation, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to his external senses. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then entered a flower garden with all his devotees. After resting there for some time, he took his afternoon bath. Then there arrived in large quantities a variety of food that had been offered to Lord Sri Jagannath and a variety that had been offered to the Goddess of Fortune. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu finished his afternoon lunch, and after his evening bath, he went to see Lord Jagannath. So in this way, that pastime took place today. And we can see how that natural love for Krishna that is situated within the core of our hearts is covered by our selfishness, that core desire to enjoy rather than serve. But by applying ourselves to the process of the Vedic culture, and especially direct devotional service through hearing, chanting, glorifying Krishna, as will be described later in this chapter, that becomes cleansed. Chaito Darpana Marjanam, that's the process that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is offering everyone in Kali Yuga so they can come to this platform of ecstatic love. The verse again. O son of Kunti, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all austerities that you may perform, should be done as an offering unto me. Any questions or comments? Pushkar Prabhu.
So, Hare Krishna. Most of us, you haven't even been inside Jagannath Temple, but you've seen Hare Panchami. How does this deity, Murti, is that they carry a person, or is it a Murti?
It's a Murti. It's Lakshmi Devi.
It's big, it's small?
No, small.
Small.
Maybe a foot.
So, in general, inside the temple, from your understanding, because we have a Jagannath Baladev, who's the Bhadra standing by themselves, this Murti stands on the same altar, or separate, or... of Lakshmi?
Not sure, I'd have to look that up. There are some smaller deities, Utsav Vigrahas, on the altar.
On the altar?
Yes.
And, oh.
But there are, I think, Govinda, Balaram, and I'm not sure if Lakshmi
they don't look
deities.
Like Jagannath.
No, Jagannath, no, they don't. It's Krishna playing a flute.
Okay.
He's by himself, no Radharani. He's one of them.
No Radharani, but there's Lakshmi.
Oh, yes.
We aren't sure.
So Lakshmi might be on the temple. I'm not sure, like you say.
Because Lakshmi is usually never alone. She's with Narayana.
And Krishna is never alone, yes.
So.
But I don't know why Lakshmi would be with Krishna, because he's Govinda, is the Vijay Vigraha.
Right. So these things, you never asked that when you were doing your research?
I did, but I wrote it down. It's in the book, but I'd have to look at it. Also,
it's
you can't take pictures. So there's
what?
No photos of the deities to analyze.
Your book is already printed?
Jai Jagannath. Yeah, it was years ago.
And it's in that book?
I think so. I think I put what's on the altar there.
And then, okay, it was mentioned how the next day they promised that he's going to come out, but he doesn't come out for
not
another
the
five,
next day.
Comes out
not
minutes.
At all. It's five, 4 or 5 more days. And then when he comes back, there's a whole fight again. He comes back on a codicil. This is the fifth day, so it's 6 more days. So when he comes back, when they have Bahuri Yatra, he arrives back at the temple, and it's kind of like a twofold experience. What happens is that the Goddess of Fortune is so angry, she shuts the door, and she won't let him in. But the temple deity can't enter the temple on a codicil, so he stands outside all night, and that's when you see this picture. It's called Sunavesha. He's dressed in gold. They have about 30, 40 kgs of gold for the deities. And he dresses very opulently, only for a few hours, like maybe 11 to 1 at night. Very mellow, peaceful, nice. Everybody's just walking around, taking darshan. And then the next day, again, these Saivites from the Jagannath and the ones from Lakshmi have a dialogue back and forth, and he promises her all kinds of gifts. And he says, look what I've brought you. And
not then, quite as heavy. Don't start beating on the car.
No.
Would you call it that festival then?
Bahuri Yatra. There's Bahuda. Coming back. the coming back festival. Ratha Yatra is that way, Bahudi Yatra is the other way. Bahuda.
Bahuda.
Vegavati? Oh, Srangata, of course, since the mic is on this side. No, come on.
You were talking about the difference between serving with our proclivities and then serving the spiritual master's desire, whatever that is, with the latter seeming to be more advanced. But then I think of elevated devotees in our society who seem to find full surrender within their proclivities, like Indrajumi Maharaj or Satchinanda.
Certainly. But it doesn't mean that you can act only in that one. A nice example is that in India, a Brahmin would never do the work of a bhangi. A bhangi is a street sweeper, a plumber who would clean a toilet. So if a person joins a temple, one of the ISKCON temples, for example, and he's a Brahmin, and the temple commander says, clean the shower, clean the toilet, he'll say, no, I'm a Brahmin, I never do that work. You get a bhangi to do it. But a devotee would transcend that. The other example, of course, is the gopis. They're married. I mean, ultimately, there's a spontaneity which transcends duty according to proclivity or status in society. That's the point. But I agree wholly with you that if a person is engaged in their natural function according to their proclivity, they're going to be naturally more encouraged, inspired, enthusiastic, steady, determined, etc. In that. So thank you for pointing it out.
Hare Krishna. Actually, I have somebody else's Sankirtan story came to my mind when you were describing how Prabhupada said Yaj Jahosi Dadasi, that verse, that no, don't sell jewelry, just go out and distribute books. But you said, so anyway, the temple presidents needed money, and in the 80s, there were a group of us all around the world, actually, that were selling paintings for Krishna. And we'd bring back and give all the money. It's not you give some percentage, you give it all. So a god sister of mine, she was, and we were convinced that whatever the people that we were trying to sell to gave, it was all going in Krishna's service. So we were feeling like we did when we used to do books. So this devotee, she was, she'd met a really nice lady. She really wanted the lady to buy the painting. And she's holding the painting up like this. She can't see the lady's face. And behind the painting, she's praying to our little traveling Gornitai deities that were with our traveling party. Please let this lady buy the painting. If you just let her buy this painting, I promise I'll make you a lemon pie. And so the lady actually bought the painting. And like a week or so went by, and she hadn't made any pie. And then from within her heart or head or somewhere, it came very strong one day. You promised! So she made the pie.
Very nice. Yes.
I was just wondering, I was watching on the internet the Ratha Yatra and the crowds, the people. Oh my God. And the camera always pans over the crowd just to give you a perspective of how many people are there. Back in Lord Chaitanya's time, were there as many people like that?
Apparently, yeah. It was packed. And if you see paintings, older paintings, historical paintings, of course, we don't have any maybe from that time. But what happened, it's also described in the description here, that there were, seven different kirtan groups?
Yeah.
And they would form circles. One, two, three deep around Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, keeping the crowds away so that he would not be inhibited during his dancing. So yeah, apparently, this Ratha Yatra has been well attended for thousands of years.
Because I was thinking about the kirtan parties that Lord Chaitanya had around the carts, and it just seems very crowded to have a kirtan party in front of the carts. Or around the carts.
The roadway, it's called Grand Road. Maybe 50 yards, 40 yards wide. So there's actually a million people. They've done it from, but it's 2.5 kilometers. So it's a couple miles. 50 yards wide, all that town. It's crowded, no doubt. It's packed, but it's a good example. And you know, it's things happen when you get that many people that crowded. But for the most part, it's very tolerable. Most of the Westerners who aren't used to crowds go up on the top of the buildings and rent a seat.
I saw at one point the chokidars were beating the crowds with sticks.
They have to keep them back. Yeah, it's hard. It's very difficult. They have a real challenge. There's a huge contingency of policemen and policewomen who come in line. And, you know, it's also, in this day and age, security. I think just a week before in Bodh Gaya, which is another town in central India, there was bombings. So they were real concerned about that. It's a major endeavor, yes.
Prabhu, can you just repeat the numbers on the prasadam?
The what?
The prasadam distribution, the numbers that you gave.
How much?
Oh, it was between 10 and 20,000 per day, and sometimes 25,000, and up to 50,000 to 75,000 on Rath Yatra. Yeah. Jai, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai.
Many places it's lack, holy lack in the shop.
Yeah, oh, for
how many people are around?
Going, yeah.
Yeah, traveling, going.